Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and our top story on federalnewsradio.com is Fed's interested in phased retirement, left playing waiting game. And this phased retirement idea is funny to me because everybody agrees it's a good idea. Everybody thinks it should happen. And yet we're still waiting, as the headline to Jack's story implies, Mike.
Yeah, well, Lauren Larson and I talked with Catherine Archuleta a couple of weeks ago, the online chat, and Jack has taken it from that, and there's a link to it so people can hear exactly what she said as part of the chat and what she said on the radio. But one thing about it, a lot of people are criticizing this because it's taken so long. I think it's going into its second year now, and everybody says it's easy, just do it. And then if you realize how the civil service works, how government works, how the laws work, this is a very complicated issue. For instance, once you have phased retirement, how long do they phase in? Do they work 3 days a week? Do they work four? Do they work two? We know that part of their time is going to be spent mentoring their possible successors. How much time? And what if there isn't a successor? What about the pay versus the retirement? Do they get double pay? Do they double dip? Or do they just break even? Do they earn retirement credit while they're in phased retirement? Do they contribute to their thrift savings plan and other programs like that? And if so, how much? So it's a very, very tricky thing. You know, at first glance, you say, I could do this in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually quite complicated. They want to get it right. And this is an example of Congress says, let's have peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Okay, bang, you take it away, bureau of the budget, or what have you. So it's a very complicated issue. I think the fact that she committed it all, I believe she said, try to have it in by this fiscal year, which would be October 1 at the latest. I think that was newsworthy in and of itself.
The execution is always trickier than the conception.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think just the fact that Catherine Archuleta was here and was talking to you, you know, was on the show and was talking about these kinds of issues is very encouraging. John Barry did the same thing when he was OPM director, but she's made it very clear she's not going to let this stuff lie. She's going to try to keep the momentum.
Right, and this is something I like to tell everybody. We did not give her advanced questions or anything like that. Obviously, they knew what we were interested in, and I saved phased retirement for the last because that could be the most controversial, but you know we saved time for that. But she gave a very straightforward answer, and I threw her a curve. The first thing I said was, this is the toughest winter I can remember in Washington ever, and you seem to have done very well with all of these snow days. And I remember when John Barry, who was a veteran of the federal government, loved it, knew it inside and out, and when he came over from the National Zoo to take over OPM, he said, this is a job I've always wanted, but the one thing he dreaded was the snow call.
Mm-hmm.
So OPM did very well under extremely trying circumstances.
Do you think maybe some of the restlessness about getting this phased retirement done is because everybody agreed with it when the idea first came out, and so people thought, oh, well, of all the things in Washington that are contentious, this isn't one of them, so this should happen pretty quickly? And as you say, you make a pretty good case that this is standard operating procedure for something of this substance in government, and yet people we're expecting it to happen faster, and it's an expectations problem, not an execution problem.
Yeah, I think this is a city of great expectations and delayed deadlines. But again, it is tricky. It is complicated. They have to follow the law and this sort of thing. And I think the other thing too, and I find this still with buyouts, and although not as much as when they started, but people used to call and they'd say, who do I call to get a buyout? You know, it doesn't work that way.
The buyout commission.
Yeah, right. Yeah, give me your secret number.
Yeah.
I got one the other day, an email from a guy, and he said something about, what about a postal, what are the chances of a postal buyout for the East Anglia post office in North Carolina? I mean, it was a specific.
Right.
He had a its own zip code, a tiny little post office, and they don't break it down that way. They don't do it that way. But I think a lot of people think maybe that once they have phased retirement, all you have to do is say, "Hey, I'm 60 years old. I'm tired. when do I start my phased retirement? It's not going to work that way. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at the agency pleasure and at the agency's need.
Mm-hmm. Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and your column today on federalnewsradio.com is titled Cover-Ups 101. And you draw a very interesting distinction, I think, between what happens when somebody commits a major screw-up in the private sector and what happens when somebody commits a major screw-up in the federal government. And you're comparing the VA situation and the GSA conference scandal from a couple of years back to what's going on at General Motors, not something that I think most people would make a connection between the mm-hmm. two, but I think you make it eloquently.
There was a recall of several million cars sold between an extended period of years, and it turned out there was a safety flaw in them that could cause the ignition to turn off, which could be embarrassing if you're doing 65 miles an hour.
Problem.
And prevent the airbags from deploying.
Another
when,
problem.
When you probably never needed them more.
Right.
If you stop suddenly. This went unreported for years, and yet I believe the cost of the ignition switch to fix it was something like 57 cents. And it was years mm-hmm. that this went on. Full disclosure, I have one of those cars.
Uh-huh.
And when I heard about it and then got the recall notice, I was scared to death. You may have noticed my hair turned white over the last few months.
Whiter.
And there was another recall of a truck, kind of a truck. And, you know, we got letters and we got postcards saying, be careful, don't do this, don't put any weight on it. But it was sort of like don't driving it. But one of the recall notices for a certain model of truck, and I forget the company now. I think I know, but I don't want to blacken them. If
yeah.
not them. But they said don't drive your truck into the repair facility. Have it towed in.
Wow.
I kid you not. So that's scary stuff. And I think if something of this magnitude had happened in the government, we would be having hearings galore on it. And as it is, there were a couple days of hearings. Maybe a half a dozen people were fired who were unnamed, and it's gone.
Yeah. We did see in the headlines today that Mary Barra at GM has fired 15 people, but I did see a headline that indicated that none of them were very high-level executives.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I've talked to several people, too, including a dealer here in the Washington area, a Chevy dealer, and he said that he thinks she was set up. This problem has been going on for years. She has been head of GM for, what, less than a year, something like that?
Yeah, a short period of time.
So it, quote, happened on her watch, although it really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But she, if there's any blame to be had, she will take it. And some people say this is the way you bring a woman up into the corridors of power and then knock her down. Interesting.
It's an interesting viewpoint, and I did note that until I read the report, one of the stories about it today, I didn't remember the names of any of the people that had run GM over the past decade or so, even through the financial crisis that they went through where the government owned General Motors
yeah.
for a period of time. I didn't remember who any of the CEOs were. And so that's the level of attention that it probably registers with most people.
Absolutely.
Where everybody knows right now the name of Eric Shinseki.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too, because when you look back historically, there are some senators that are memorable, there are others there are times when you can't name anybody in the U.S. Senate. And I think that's really true. There was Charlie Wilson of mm-hmm. General Motors fame, who I think famously said, what's good for General Motors is good for the USA. Robert McNamara was one. And Lee Iacocca comes to mind. I think he was Chrysler, but
he was at Ford for a long time, too, developed the Mustang.
He was kind of a player. I mean, he caught the media's attention, mm-hmm. but you're right. They're not household names. And many people know who General Shinseki was.
Yeah. What do we take away from this, the points that you make in the column today and all of this conversation about the public versus private? I mean, is it necessarily a bad thing that the federal government's held to a higher standard than the private sector?
Probably should be held to a higher standard, and I think generally is, but it's a little bit sad to see. Well, we need to see how this VA thing is going to shake out. It's much more emotional. They're not going to be fines, and it may have an impact on federal executives in every other federal agency. But, we should reprise this in November.